I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the bounce back for stocks and a very critical 72 hours ahead with major earnings reports and that key inflation read looming. The investment committee now debating the markets. Joining me for the hour today, Stephanie Link, Jason Snipe, Jim Labenthal. We're all at Post 9, and we check the markets where this bounce back continues. Got the best two-day gain, Steph, for the S&P in about 2 months. You've got stable yields, 10-year yield dipping to about 4.58, at least at last check. So let's assess where we are after what was rocky last week, and we're getting a little bit back over the last couple days.
Well, we have a really big week, as you mentioned. We have a whole ton of earnings, 31% of the S&P 500 earnings this week. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the tech names, really big and going to be pivotal, I think, for this market. But then we also have to get through the inflation number on Friday. And I think from what I've been hearing, a lot of people are really bared up for this number because they're looking at the CPI, they're looking at the PPI, and we're nowhere near 2%. But I actually think it's probably going to come in line because I think the PPI is more of a reflection for PCE in terms of the same kinds of components versus CPI, which is much a big part of it is shelter. So I think if we get kind of like an inline number on Friday and we have probably solid earnings because we're already seeing solid earnings, I think that maybe we can see a bounce. We're oversold for sure. And oh, by the way, then not only have we been talking about the growth around the world being better than expected, here we're running at about 2.5% in GDP. We talked about last week, the IMF raising growth to 3.2%, China at 5.5%. Last night, we got the PMIs in India, and they're going to grow probably something like 7% in GDP this year. So I talk about the growth all the time because I think it does bode very well for earnings. And so far, we have seen pretty good earnings across the board from the P&Gs, the Pepsis, the Danahers. We're going to talk about some of the names that we own as well. And so it's pretty encouraging. So I think the setup is pretty good.
So, you know, Jason, we were below 5,000, you know, last week. People were saying, okay, is 5% pullback for the S&P going to turn into 10% pullback? And, you know, once again, the bears were left wondering if that was it.
Right.
Do you think it was it? That was it? 5%?
Well, obviously it's possible. I mean, Steph makes a great point.
It's possible, but does it feel like, give me something.
I don't think so in the near term, and I think the balance is obviously
you
encouraging.
Wait. You don't think that was it?
Not in the near term.
Okay.
And I think it's encouraging, just obviously viewing the technicals. We bounced off the RSI. It was around 30 for the NASDAQ. Mm-hmm. It was around 30 for the SPY, right, the S&P 500. So it's encouraging that we've seen a little bit of a bounce. I think yields, to your point, Scott, earlier that you mentioned, have been quiet. Gold came down around 3% yesterday. So this is a humongous week. As Steph mentioned, 30-plus percent of the S&P is reporting this week. So we need to hear ongoing growth stories that we've already heard through earnings season. So I think we could get a catalyst from what Microsoft says, what Meta says, what Google says, and the like.
I think, Jimmy, we're at, 4% or so off the high for the S&P? I mean, you're at 5,061 as we speak. Goldman today says the market is still vulnerable on the idea of sticky inflation. Barclays urges investors today to fade any bounce and position for higher yields. It's the higher for longer comeuppance of sorts that, you know, we were wondering when it was going to hit, and maybe it started to hit late last week. Maybe it still will more, but the market's trying to make some kind of statement over the last couple of days, perhaps.
Yeah, and the inexorable march to 5% on the 10-year seems to be interrupted, at least for the moment. You know, those strategists' comments, Scott, and viewers, what I would say is it's a question of degree. I mean, all of this is a question of degree. Jason, you were just saying, yeah, it could go down lower, but by how much? It could go down by 2% or by 7%. Right. Because if it's 2%, folks, I'm going to tell you something. It is very unwise to sell in anticipation of that. I really can't stress that point strongly enough. And let me rephrase it on the other side. Do you want to buy? Do you want to own stocks here? This economy is very strong. If we're talking about higher for longer, we're talking about that because of the strength of the economy, because the consumer is employed and will continue to consume, and because profits are growing, Stephanie, that's the point you just made. I mean, this is a very benign intermediate to long-term situation, but in the short term, sure, 10-year yields could go back up to, you know, 465, 470, and that may freak the market out a little bit, but I would not sell in anticipation of that.
Steph, what do you make of what, you know, Barclays has suggested, fade any bounce and Goldman says we're still vulnerable?
I mean, I think you can probably fade some of the tech bounces because they're still really overowned. And I know that we've, I mean, I think the setup is pretty good because some of these stocks are down 6, 10% from the highs. But as I say, there a lot of them are overowned. I think you still want to be selective in tech. And yeah, I mean, I would probably be trimming some Amazon if we get a nice bounce because I've already had a really great bounce and it's not cheap. That being said, I think you can be selective and own other names that have come down even more so. Within tech, we can talk a little bit about the semiconductor stocks in a bit. Overall, though, I am very encouraged what I'm seeing in the industrials. I was very encouraged in terms of the action in financials. I mean, remember when J.P. Morgan reported that stock was down 6% and the whole group got hammered. And now it's kind of taking new leadership. So
all-time
I like
high,
that.
All-time high today for Goldman.
And yeah, and
to
for a lot of them act really well. And that's where I see value, Scott. That and then in energy. I mean, I thought Schlumberger's quarter was great last week. I actually added to it last week. So I think that there are places that you want to buy on dips and even maybe buy even into strength on some of the non-tech areas. And then when you get extremes in tech on both sides, if we jump a lot higher in tech, I think you take your gains. And if you see some opportunities, there's that as well. But I don't want to, I'm not going overweight tech. I want to go overweight the other parts of this market.
What do you think about that, Jason? Because, you know, we've watched this rotation happen over the, let's just say the last week,
right,
where you've had money coming out of tech and going into whether it's financials or staples or healthcare or utilities. Now, I understand, of course, that some of those are going to be viewed more defensively than others, obviously.
100%.
Utilities, staples, et cetera. Right. But there has been a bit of a rotation. And just when you thought, like other times, you thought that rotations were going to take hold, the dip buyers come in and say, you know what, NVIDIA at 750, I'll buy that.
Mm-hmm.
Now the stock's up 70 bucks from the low of last Friday when it was down 13.5% last week. My point is, all of the mega cap tech stocks right now are green. NASDAQ had a good day yesterday. NASDAQ's having a great day today. Microsoft, Meta, Alphabet report this week. Steph says, I don't know if I'd be overweight them. I wonder if we're going to get a reminder this week from them of why we are overweight those names and why people continue to buy the dips and why the NASDAQ's not going to have an even bigger correction than the whatever it was, 7% or so off of the high that it did.
Yeah, no, Scott, I mean, there's a lot there. And I think for me, as we look to this week, I think, you know, the point that or theme that I'm hearing is to degrees of growth, degree, like for me, as it relates to the mega cap tech spectrum, you know, guidance is going to be very important to me. AI application use cases, what that revenue looks like. You know, again, this is not a new narrative in terms of rotation. Tech was the seventh best performer in the first quarter, right? So rotation has been happening. We've seen it play out a little bit further. The story has played out a little bit further over the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, in terms of pricing to perfection, listen, we're expecting 40% year-over-year earnings growth in the tech spectrum.
Are these priced for perfection anymore? I mean, isn't that part of the recent pullback that they've had? Maybe they're not so priced for perfection anymore. And it's not like all of the multiples on those stocks are well above their 10-year historical averages either.
There are several that are
below.
Very true. And here's the thing. I think the names will do well. I think the reports will be strong. I think it's going to be about the guidance going forward because I think earnings growth is rotating into other areas, somewhat the cyclicals, the industrials, other parts of the market. And I think that's where you need to look to.
Well, I mean, Bank of America, their flow show, Jimmy says, large financials buying that they've seen last week, and that tech and discretionary is where the outflows were. Not surprisingly, last week, discretionary and tech were two of the three sectors that were in the red, whereas everything else, utilities, financial staples, healthcare, real estate, energy, industrials, comm services, were all in the green.
You know,
we make of the flows.
Well, I mean, the flows generally are going to trace where the sentiment is. And I'm not so much a sentiment guy. I'm much more of a fundamental guy. And where this takes me, by the way, also the flows are backward looking. I mean, I want to answer your question, Scott, but I think the right answer is, why are the flows going to go where they should go? And the answer to that is fundamentals. And, you know, Jason was talking about the rotation. If you look at fundamentally what's going on outside of tech, I'm not going to take anything away from tech, but if you look at what's going on outside of tech, there is strong demand. I mean, these cyclical stocks, I don't care if it's airlines, auto manufacturers, the demand is really, really strong. I just looked at this, and sometimes I know this kind of irritates you a little bit,
oh,
but I want to do this.
If you're bringing up the TSA thing, I'm going to leave.
No, don't leave, because this is important, and I think you're going to find it useful. I really do. Okay. This year to date.
He says TSA, I'm leaving. Go ahead.
I want you to stay.
I'm just telling the executive producer right there to be ready. Go ahead.
There have been only 4 days this year where TSA passenger counts.
He did it. He did it.
I'm out.
If you don't find this useful,
you can come. No.
If you don't find this useful, I mean, look, this is where I live, it's in fundamentals, okay? There's only been 4 days this year where there has been lower passenger counts than last year. Only 4 days. On average this year, passenger counts has been 5% higher than the year prior, on average. Look, people are traveling. I'm not taking anything away from technology, okay? And maybe these earnings are going to come out this week, Scott, and they're going to blow everybody away and they're going to do fine. What my point is, and this is Jason's comment about rotation, there is fundamental reason for rotation to be occurring. And just a coda
but
on this.
Not, it depends where you're rotating to. You bought small caps last week.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
I'm glad, too. I mean, the Russell's down 6% this month.
Okay. For in the last 3 days, and I bought it on Thursday. We didn't get it to Thursday. You know, we didn't get to hit it there. But, you know, over that time frame, small caps have done very well. They're doing very well today. They were actually up on Friday.
Well, they're part of the big bounce back, right? The Russell's back at 2000.
Yeah.
Rates have stabilized, right, if not come down a touch.
Right. Oh, I'm so glad you went there. Thank you. Because that's what people perceive as the headwind for small caps is rates. And I think
perception's reality.
Okay, I love where you're going with this. Let's dissect the reality.
Complimenting me a lot after I said I was going to leave.
I know. I want to keep you here. I got to keep you. I got to keep you enthralled here. Okay.
Proceed. Look, interest, I like where this is going. Proceed.
All right. Interest expense for small caps, folks, is 4% of their revenue. Okay. If interest rates stay high or even go higher, the issue is not that their interest expense goes higher. It's minimal. The issue is if it causes a recession. If higher for longer causes a recession. And folks, what I'm seeing from cyclical demand, we are very, very far away from a recession.
And that was my point about the inflation report on Friday. If it comes in line-ish, maybe a little hotter, a little cooler, then maybe rates can settle down and you can continue to see this rotation. And to your point on rotation, both of you, the Russell 1000 growth is up 640 basis points year to date. The Russell 1000 value is up 474 basis points year to date. That's about a 200-ish spread. In February 9th, that spread was 900 basis points growth over value. So we are seeing not just like various different sectors, you're seeing a style change too. And I think if interest rates can kind of stay where they are and stabilize, that will continue.
Yeah, well, you know, volatility in the bond market, we've learned many times,
yes,
is not good for equities.
Right.
So if we get some stabilization, still on the conversation of, you know, betting either for or against technology stocks, we are learning that short sellers are profiting from betting against tech. Our Kate Rooney's been following the money there and has this report for us. Kate, what are we learning?
Hey, Scott. Yeah, so last week, at least, the big tech bears saw a record windfall. That was during the NASDAQ sell-off. Short sellers in the Magnificent Seven, say that 10 times fast, right? Raked in a weekly profit of $10 billion. That was an all-time high, according to Ortex. Those tech giants, as you mentioned, Scott, have recovered a bit. They are the most shorted stocks in the U.S. That's according to S3. NVIDIA is number one, then Microsoft, followed by Apple, and then Tesla. There has been some negative sentiment around these names, but short interest may be more about using mega-cap tech to hedge. It can be more efficient than going long other sectors. Over the long run, though, shorting big tech, it's been a lot less profitable. So NVIDIA shorts for the year are down 35%, Meta shorts down 27%. Amazon, Microsoft, and Alphabet bears are all in the red. And of that cohort, it's really only been profitable to short Apple and Tesla. So the Tesla bears have lost total $52.5 billion shorting Tesla going back to its IPO. You can see there only 2 years have been profitable for the Tesla shorts. This might be one of them. They're up $9 billion for the year. Scott, back to you.
Yeah, we'll follow it. Kate, thank you. SK Rooney, Elon Musk today, speaking of Tesla, which, by the way, you know, reports, as I think you know, in overtime on X, his X, the car business is tough, quote unquote, is what he said. I mean, that stock is down 42% year to date. Jimmy, they have just continued price cuts. When analysts think they're done, they're not done. You have the direction of the company weighing on shares. How do you view this in what was once a very important earnings report for the overall growth trade? Now, as the market cap has come down, pardon me, the market cap has come down, like been cut in half, basically. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like it holds that degree of importance.
That's a very good point. It may not be as important as the market cap comes down, but certainly I think for sentiment, and there's a lot of people for whom Tesla represents the sort of hyper growth trade of years past. Look, the unfortunate truth that's being found out right now is that it's a car company. And I know when I say that, some people, like, their hair stands on end, but I'm sorry, it is a car company. And when you are a car company, you have a lot of property, plant, and equipment that costs a lot. You want to get volume through those factories to cover the cost. How do you do that when the EV business is kind of in a bad spot here? You lower prices. And that's not good for overall earnings, but it covers the cost of running the factories. Now, some people are going to say, what about full self-driving? And I'm going to say, everybody's got it. I'm sorry. Everybody's got it. It's not something that's specific to Tesla.
They are the first mover, though, and the market leader in some respects. It's I think, a little over the top to be wholly dismissive of them as just simply a car company. Yeah, you can have issues, and probably rightfully so, with should it be trading at that much of a premium to other car makers, give you that, but charging network, battery technology, first mover technology, lead
in
EVs.
There's no moats to it. I'm sorry. There's competition in all of that. And, you know, when we talk about—
Does it necessarily need a quote-unquote moat?
Well, look, here's when I think about automotive companies and moats, what comes to mind for me and many other car investors is Ferrari. There's a moat. I mean, a lot of people will say Ferrari's not a car company, it's a luxury company, but those margins are completely defensible by the moat around Ferrari. What we're seeing in Tesla, if you went back a year and a half ago, people would say, look at the margins on Tesla, they're similar to Ferrari. That was then, this is now. They are now having to cut costs to promote volume through their factories.
The charging network might be a moat. I mean, if you want to go that granular.
It might be, Scott.
Why do you think the major automakers are doing deals with Tesla?
Yeah, I don't think that that's going to be enough to support the market cap where it is. That might be a moat. I'll grant you. I just don't think that's going to be enough to support the market cap.
We talk about, Jason, the importance of Tesla, you know, in terms of a stock and earnings, not necessarily where it once was. I mean, for all intents and purposes, we've removed it from the Mag 7 conversation, right? Stock down a lot, market cap cut in half. So we've taken it out. It means a lot, though, to Cathie Wood. I'll tell you that, because the flagship ARKK Innovation Fund, in which this is a large holding, interesting read today in the journal, the popular funds are sinking fast. Those are their words. Why? Because you've had a lot of redemptions. You've had investors pulling $2.2 billion from the active funds this year. That tops outflows from all of 2023. Here we are. We're just in April.
Yeah.
In all of 2023. Why? Tesla's down month to date, 17.5. Coinbase is down 12. Roku's down 7. Block's down 13. UiPath is down 14. CRISPR down 16. Rates going up.
Yep.
Not the greatest time in the world to own. Not all of these obviously fall into this basket, 100%. But non-profitable, high multiple tech.
Yeah, and I remember us having this conversation a few years ago, Scott, when we were talking about the rate raising cycle. And we were talking about long duration assets and non-profitable stock and the impact that higher rates have on these companies. And I think you're just starting to see that ring true. Higher for longer story. We came into this year again. We've talked about this a lot this year. Six cuts coming into this year, three cuts, now potentially zero cuts. And what is the material impact on long duration stocks? Not good, right? So that's why we're seeing some of the price action that we've seen in
these
names.
You know where we've seen some of the greatest divergence in sort of, you know, these long duration stocks versus non-profitable versus stocks that have become profitable? Lyft versus Uber.
Yeah.
Take a look at the 1 year performance of these two names. I mean, it's so stark, right?
Yeah.
Uber's up 129%. I bring it up because you bought it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this stock, to your point, Scott, I mean, it's up 128% over the year, over the last year. It's up 14% year to date. So for us, we've been looking at this for quite some time. We saw a little bit of a material pullback over the last few weeks. It's about 16% off its 52-week high. Gross bookings are up 22%. Mobility up 29%. Delivery booking up 19%. They are hitting on all cylinders. Dara has struck a new culture at Uber, and I just think there's a lot of earnings potential going forward. There's almost a 50% growth rate, so we like this one. We decided to add a small position.
Right. You know, I'm getting that, Steph. It's, you know, free money. A lot of boats rise in free money. When money's no longer free, you see who's got the bathing suit on and who doesn't. And the divergence between Lyft and Uber has been so dramatic.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's obviously not just that kind of stock. But how do you view some of these high growth, non-profitable names that have gotten an AI, in some respects, halo effect from some of these other stocks and now are coming back down to earth in a sharp way?
So for me, I can own maybe one or two of them in my portfolio. I'm very valuation centric. We all are. Mm-hmm. But there are some fun stories out there. Mm-hmm. Maybe Uber is one of them. I think of Snowflake as being mine, the one that I have not been right on. But I do think that it's an exciting story when you can talk about a company that has 22% product revenue growth, 30% total revenue growth, billings, bookings up 30%. Like, these are real numbers. Fine, the stock is not cheap. And that's why, and it's a long duration asset. And so, you know, higher interest rates are going to hurt it. And then you have to execute, which I would argue they did execute last quarter, but you had a CEO change and that sort of thing. But I think you can own maybe one or two of these. I think you definitely want to have the total addressable market stories in AI, cloud, data center, cybersecurity. We talk about all the time that I don't think gets nearly the respect that it should. And I have a very big position in Fortinet, but it also trades with the rate story. So for me, I would rather be less susceptible to kind of the rate story and more just focused on fundamentals, valuations, and have a few fun names, maybe they're not even in my benchmark, to create some alpha.
So let's throw up the S&P if we could intraday. We're going to take a quick break, but Jamie Dimon is speaking at the New York Economic Club, and whereas he's been known, I think, fairly of late to characterize his comments as more cautious than not on a number of different topics, is now saying, quote, the economy is booming. And then it's been booming for a while. He does say that current, and this really echoes where he has been of late in terms of the cautionary comments. He says the current geopolitical situation, quote, probably the most complicated and dangerous since World War II. So, you know, whereas he is giving, you know, the economy the credit that certainly he sees, and he has as good a look as anybody on the stability and strength of the United States economy. He is obviously still concerned about some of the issues and flashpoints around the world. But we're going to take a quick break. There's your highs of the day for the S&P. There's Mr. Dimon on the left speaking not too far from here. We'll monitor that. We'll come back. We'll talk about committee stocks on the move next.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
All right, we are back. Let's do some committee stocks on the move. First, to the man in the stock that has gotten more mention on this program than arguably anything else in the history of this broadcast.
I just said I'm not going to do TSA anymore.
Cleveland Cliffs. Down sharply today. Can we see the stock, please? Down 6% year to date. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, look, when the stock has big moves like this, especially down, you mention it a lot.
I do mention it a lot.
This is on earnings? They missed, right?
Yeah, headline miss on the top and bottom line. But, okay. Look, as far as why the stock is down, sometimes the market does things that are unexplainable and gives you an opportunity. And I think this is one of those times. When you see a stock that's down 9%, you think to yourself, is there something fundamentally wrong with the company? Is there something wrong with the economy that we don't know, particularly for a steel company?
I mean, they missed their earnings and sales.
Not by a lot. Look, let me cut to the chase. The business outlook is very, very bright for Cleveland Cliffs. The cash flows, you look at EBITDA, it's up something like 70% year over year. There was a slight decrease in buying from service centers and distribution centers after the UAW strike. That is behind us, okay? What you're looking at right now is the auto industry, notwithstanding Tesla, outside of Tesla, is going quite strong. We'll get to that in a second. Their costs to produce steel are going down. Volumes are up, prices are going up. Now, here's what the most important thing is. I'm buying more shares. I strongly disagree with the market reaction today. And you know who else is buying shares? Not today, but in a couple of days when the blackout period is ended, is the company. They announced a $1.5 billion share buyback. That's roughly equal to 17% of the company's market cap right now. Over the last 2 years, they've buried 11% of the shares outstanding. I'm not talking about share buybacks to sterilize options issuance. I'm talking about a decrease in the shares outstanding, which increases my ownership and will continue to do so in a company that I tell you the future is very bright.
Financial
for.
Engineering. That's what they call that.
Yeah, I call it getting a much greater share of a company that I really like, whose earnings are growing.
You think... Let's just assume that the Nippon and Letter X deal doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this company fit in that?
If they do anything, it's going to be at a much lower price than when Nippon Steel was going to pay for U.S. Steel. There was obviously a lot of talk on the conference call about this, and I think there was at least one analyst who seemed a little hung up about, you know, whether Cleveland Cliffs might be able to peel off some assets from U.S. Steel. Look, that's not Cleveland Cliffs' game. Cleveland Cliffs' game here is to see what happens with this deal, whether the president nixes it as it says, and if that happens, they're going to come in with a much lower bid. And that's going to be good for the company.
All right. The Cliffs CEO, by the way, is an exclusive interview today in overtime. So you don't want to miss that. GE Aerospace, they beat, right? They raised their guidance too. 52-week high today, Steph.
Yeah, they're hitting on all cylinders. They really, truly are, especially orders were up 34% in the quarter, adjusted revenue up 15%, operating margins up 40 basis points, year over year. Free cash flow was double from last year. They have a $15 billion buyback. They increased the dividend back in March. So I think a lot of good things are happening, and I just want to stay on board.
You want to give me something on GM, Jimmy?
I want to give you a lot on GM. First off,
I mean, they raised their guidance. Stock's up 25% year to date.
Yeah, outside of EVs, the auto business is very strong, period. Now, what's also strong is GM's. I don't like this term financial engineering. I understand why you say it. I respect it, but
I mean, that's what people say.
I got it. I'm not you in particular, one in general.
It
is what it is. Now, here's what it also is. With the amazing cash flows that this company has been generating for 2 years, 3 years actually, and the cash balances that they've had during that time, they've bought back 17% of their shares in the last quarter. I mean, just, you know, period. That's it. They did that accelerated share repurchase. It's showing up in a share count that is 17% below, or I'm sorry, than a year ago. Apologies, not in the last quarter. And at the same time, the demand for autos is there. Demand for internal combustion engine autos is there. They've got good pricing. They've got good volumes. The UAW and this idea that the UAW took GM to the cleaners is an absolute farce. The UAW got a good deal. GM managed to cut costs elsewhere, and they're doing extraordinarily well. Right. Last thing on this.
Yes.
If you want to think about a price target on this, I'd put around 70, and here's why. Stock trades at about 4.5 times the upper level of their earnings range. Traditionally, it's sold at 6 times, and what I think you're going to see as this cycle continues is that it goes through that historical multiple of 6 and gets to 7.
All right, price target to 70 for Farmer Jim. Freeport, Steph, they beat. They raised their guide.
Yeah.
You own the stock, right?
Yeah. I think their guidance for cash costs, copper cash costs, are going to be a little bit higher than expected. I kind of feel like they always do this. Stock always trades down on the earnings. It's an opportunity. Remember, for every 10 cents per pound change in copper, that's $400 million plus in EBITDA to the company. So very levered to copper. I like copper because of the reasons I mentioned in the first block, that the global growth is actually stronger than expected. But copper production was actually up 12% in the quarter, and that was a beat. And I thought the overall quarter was good. So I'm a likely buyer. It's not down enough for me today to buy more, but I'm a likely buyer if it continues to be weak.
Okay. That company's CEO, by the way, is on overtime as well. Let's get the headlines now with Julia Boorstin. Hi, Julia.
Hey, Scott. Well, former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker has resumed his testimony in Donald Trump's hush money trial. This after earlier the judge held a hearing on whether Trump violated a gag order. Prosecutors are seeking $3,000 in fines for the first three posts on Trump's social media account they say violated the order. The judge has yet to make a decision. Ukraine has restricted consular services for military-aged men living abroad. This is in an effort to increase conscription in its war against Russia. In a post on X, the country's foreign minister said, quote, staying abroad did not relieve a citizen of their duties. The Eurostat database estimates about 860,000 Ukrainian men were living in the European Union as of January. And Taylor Swift's latest album, The Tortured Poets Department, became the most streamed album across Spotify, Amazon Music, and Apple Music, breaking records across all three platforms at its initial release. Spotify reported that the album was streamed 300 million times on its first day. Scott, I have to admit, I was at least one of those streams. Back over to you.
All right, Julia, thank you. Julia Boorstin. Up next, we have four bullish calls on four committee names. Calls of the day next. Of the day. Dow's good for 235, by the way. S&P good for about 58. Procter & Gamble, price target raised Jason Snipe to 170 from 168. Wow. At Barclays, reiterate overweight. The latest quarter, similar to the prior one, fell better than muted expectations into that release, they say.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, the price action in the stock has been solid this year. It's up 10% year to date. The print was solid. I mean, it was a top and a miss on the top, you know, some destocking issues. But I think they've managed to navigate through some of the inflationary pressures fairly well. I mean, margin expansion is growing there. And I think, you know, there's a little bit of talk about China. China's, you know, I think it's priced into a lot of different stocks. It was down 10%, not 15. But I like this one. I think they're managing the environment well.
You want to talk about Qualcomm, too, which was initiated as a buy at benchmark. Price target 200, well-positioned as an AI leader in smartphones and PCs. Quote, we believe Qualcomm is the company that's best positioned to bring data processing and intelligent functionality to the edges of the network, enabling cloud-edge convergence through total connectivity.
Yeah, so Qualcomm, another story that for me, you know, the price action has been positive. You know, over the last few years, I haven't been as excited about the stock, but we've talked a lot about handsets. You know, the Android sales are starting to come back online. IoT diversifying of revenue with automotive growth has been solid. It's trading at 15 times forward, so the multiple has come up a little bit. 11% growth rate. So, but I do like the AI story and the application there. So I continue to like this stuff.
How about Costco? Price target to 710 at Citi. Stock closed yesterday at 715. They reiterated as neutral.
Yeah.
What do you make of that call?
So Costco, I think one of the concerns has been a little bit of softness in the discretionary spend. What's really interesting as well is Kirkland brand, you know, is now $67 billion in revenue, which is larger than Coca-Cola, right? So put that in perspective for a minute. But I like this new management, new CFO there, you know, the annuity stream of membership growth. I think I continue to like this one. I think it's the best of breed in the staples in those. Stores here.
Jimmy, Disney, price target to 141 from 128 at Wells Fargo, reiterated overweight remains optimistic on the long-term direct-to-consumer profitability.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm optimistic on it as well. I think that's one of several things that can and should go right, so profitability and streaming. The other is related to that, getting the Hulu deal done, which does seem to be taking a long time, so hopefully that's near to come. Theme parks continue to hum along. Maybe we get some growth from studios later in the year as well. So I think there's a lot of things that can and probably will go right at Disney.
All right, we will take a quick break, and when we come back, our senior markets commentator Mike Santoli will be right here at this desk with his view on today's action. We're back. Senior markets commentator Mike Santoli here for his midday word. What's on your mind? I mean, price action will get your attention today, sure. For sure. If yesterday you weren't convinced, are you today?
I would say encouraged, but not necessarily convinced. I mean, only because you just can't tell yet.
Yeah.
You know, you have to kind of go through the sequence of we're passing this test. And, you know, every day after a week like last week, after you've had three straight down weeks, it's sort of like you wake up, make sure there's no monsters under the bed.
Yeah.
The sellers aren't going to swamp the open. You're not going to basically be in this spiral of pressure all day. And 2 days in a row, it seems like, OK, nobody showed up to slam this thing down. The last week's high is like 5080 on the S&P 500. We're kind of near there. So you have to kind of, you know, make it back incrementally. But I think responding, you know, pretty well to earnings. You obviously reset the bar lower with the price action before this week. And I think that's all pretty encouraging. You still have, you know, some stuff above that you have to get through. It'd be very surprising if it was a pure V bottom back to the highs. It's always surprising if that happens. Not unprecedented. But so far, it looks like routine pullback status is, you know, at least confirmed until proven otherwise.
Now you've, you know, recovered a good amount. And, you know, do you want to get negative again before Meta, Microsoft,
right,
and Alphabet over the next couple of days?
Yeah, that's the equation, essentially. Is this going to be used as an opportunity to say we still need to peel back from the big winners? The Mag 7 was up 28% into the highs year to date, you know, so it's not as if you're cutting into muscle yet. But yeah, so I think it's a pretty good two-way market in that respect. Waiting for the macro stuff with inflation data, it's not possible to really escape the fact that the morning lift happened when yields backed off after some soft economic data. So you need those things to help out.
Yeah, there
well.
You go, 457 on the 10-year, which is obviously directly helping the Russell, which has retaken 2,000 as well as having a good snapback in its own right.
Yeah, it is. Again, you know, you're still in the zone of we're working off the oversold conditions and see what picks us up from here.
All right, I'll see you on closing bell. That's Mike Santoli. Up next, the setup on some key committee stocks reporting in the coming days ahead. It's not only about the mega caps. There's three names right in front of you that have earnings reports coming: Caterpillar, Boeing, Visa, among others. We'll trade them next. Let's get you set up for some more key earnings coming our way, including after the bell today. It's not just Tesla, obviously. Visa, Jimmy, you own it.
Yeah, this is traditionally a company that trades at a slightly higher multiple than I'm used to, but I've grown to be very comfortable with it. It's an asset-light company. This is not a balance sheet company like an American Express. And if you just look at how the economy is coming along, and frankly, international economies are starting to pick up a little bit, this should be a decent quarter for Visa.
All right, Steph. Boeing is tomorrow before the bell.
Yeah.
Just when you think that a lot of bad news is priced into the stock, more bad news seems to come. So what are we expecting? Your expectations must be low, say the least.
They are very low, but the stock is down 35% year to date. It reflects a lot of bad news. So they already pre-announced $4.5 billion loss in free cash flow for the first quarter. I think they're going to guide down for 2024 to break even for free cash flow. By the way, that's the only thing I care about at this moment in time. And then I think eventually they can see a recovery, $5 to $6 billion in 25, $6 to $7 in 26. But we have a long way to go to even get there. Got to hear about deliveries as well as the Spirit deal. So there's going to be a lot of discussion points on the call. I do not expect it to be a catalyst for the shares short term.
All right. Tomorrow, ServiceNow in overtime, Jason Snipe.
Yeah.
What do you want to hear most about?
Yeah, so I really, you know, we've been talking about AI a lot. I think AI's implication on ASPs, average selling prices. Let's see how that rolls out. Again, they had a really nice quarter last quarter. EPS was up 36%. Revenue growth was up 26%. But the ASPs are going to be important for me.
Steph, yeah. Tomorrow after the bell, your second largest tech position is IBM.
Yes.
It reports.
And I would buy more if it's weak. It usually does trade off on any kind of currency issues. We know the dollar strength has been a problem for every multinational company. I like the mix shift that this company has gone through in terms of software, services, consulting that helps margins, offsets mainframe, tough compares there. I think 18 times forward estimates is very reasonable. So any weakness, I'd be adding to the position.
What about Lamb? Lamb reports tomorrow also.
So the problem with Lamb, I love it. I do believe in wafer fab equipment recovery. I do think they have a very good presence in AI. Mm-hmm. You need 6 times the memory for AI, so they're right there. Problem is it's only down 10%. In the last year, it's up to 72%, and the valuation has gone from 16 times to 30.
So down 9% in a month.
Yeah, but it's up 72% in the last year. Yeah. So it's not like it's, you know, really super cheap, and the valuation has re-rated. So I'm going to let this one come in more than just down 10%.
Okay, Caterpillar, Jason, is Thursday before the bell.
Yeah, so, I mean, for me, this one has obviously been a rocket ship as of late, mm-hmm. you know, up, you know, 23% year to date. So I think for me, inventories are full and sales are slowing. So that's going to be a concern for me going forward. They have a very strong balance sheet. They've been reducing costs, you know, so let's take a hard look at inventories and where they are.
Okay, up next, we document two big winners, two big losers in today's session. We're back right after this. And losers. We'll highlight the losers first. There's a method behind this. JetBlue down 17%, or at least it was. So it's down, well, theirs is down 16. The loss widened. LKQ Corporation also down big. That was the worst stock in the S&P. Big miss, profit decrease, that stock's selling off. Spotify's up big today on their strong results, new 52-week high. Want to end on JP Morgan. That stock hitting another new all-time high today. We told you earlier, Jamie Dimon speaking at the New York Economic Club. Want you to listen to what he said about the banks and regulations. Doesn't sound that happy.
You know, JP Morgan's doing so great. What do you complain about? It's got nothing to do with JP Morgan. It's got to do with what kind of financial system you want, and do you want to hamper. You know, if I make a loan here and I have to always put up 30% more capital than a European bank in America, is that right? Is that what we intended to do? You know, wasn't there supposed to be some kind of international standards here? So, yeah, there are a lot of problems with it. I'm done with regulations.
All right, Jimmy, he's done. And maybe he can be done because, you know, what was feared, let's say, in Basel is clearly not happening in that form. I mean, that's been so telegraphed at this point by the Fed and others he doesn't have to worry at least about the most onerous of regulations on the banks.
Okay. I mean, when I'm excited about JP Morgan, I'm excited about the financials. Those earnings reports actually were pretty good. The regulation and the lack thereof is not maybe what is getting me so excited. I hope he's right. I hope he's absolutely right. I hope what you just said about Basel III losing its teeth is right. But let's just say that isn't the case. I'm not saying it won't be, but if it isn't the case, you've still got good loan growth. You've got investment banking picking up. You've got trading on all the volatility in the markets. Credit quality really isn't all that bad. The financials are in a very good position right now. I think you should own financials, and JP Morgan is the creme de la creme.
Jason, you've got Goldman, which I said hit also a new all-time high today as well. You got
something
10 seconds on that?
Yeah, 10 seconds. I mean, for me, the theme as we look at banks is M&A activity is picking up in IB as well. So, yeah, I like Goldman here. That's a pure play there.
All right. We'll do a quick break. We'll do finals on the other side. Wada, we have a good one today on closing bell, 3 o'clock Eastern time. Bryn Talkington's with us ahead of Tesla's earnings. Liz Ann Saunders, Liz Young, former Fed Vice Chair Rich Clarida. We're going to get to a lot through that final stretch. Let's do final trades right now. Farmer, TSA, yeah. Please, what do you have?
Alphabet, you know, it really powered through this downturn like the downturn didn't happen, and it's about 1% from an all-time high.
Jason Snipe.
Diamondback, I like this energy name here. EPS and revenue is up 10% year over year.
All right, Stephanie Link.
I like India. Wisdom Tree India ETF, EPI. PMIs at 14-year highs. They're going to grow GDP at 7%, fastest in the world.
Okay, we can take a quick look at the markets, too. Dow is up near 250. S&P 500 up almost 57 points. We'll see what the last hour brings. I will see you then. The exchange is now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime report disclaimer.